It's time for Northwestern Outdoors Radio, the show focusing on fishing, hunting, outdoor recreation, destinations, and conservation in the region where you live and play. Northwestern Outdoors is brought to you by Max Lure Company, Sportsman's Warehouse, and Wallowa County. And now, let's see what's going on in the field and on the water with your host, John Cruz.
We're going to start things off in Wyoming today, where a lot of folks love to hunt, and for good reason. There's some very good big game hunting there when it comes to antelope, deer, elk, and more. As a matter of fact, the non-resident application deadline for elk hunting season is coming up February 1st, which is also the last day for residents and non-residents alike to apply for a moose, mountain goat, or bighorn sheep tag. You might also want to put in for the Wyoming Super Tag raffle this month. This includes 10 license drawings, one each for bighorn sheep, moose, elk, mountain goat, wild bison, deer, antelope, mountain lion, gray wolf, and black bear. There's also the Super Tag Trifecta, which is one drawing, and the winner chooses any three licenses from those we just mentioned. Super Tag tickets are $10 each. That's $10 per species. And Trifecta tickets are $30. You can put in for this through the end of June, but you ought to do it this month because a bonus raffle is in effect for anyone buying a Super Tag ticket during the month of January. The winner of this bonus raffle wins $2,000 in license application or trip credits for a hunting or fishing excursion with World Wide Trophy Adventures, and that is quite a deal. Find out more and apply today through the Wyoming Game and Fish website. This week on Northwestern Outdoors Radio, we'll be talking to Joe Pate, the man behind Exposure Shows. He's the one who puts on the sportsman shows in Eugene, Roseburg, and Medford, Oregon, as well as one in Anderson, California. COVID is forcing Joe to go virtual this year, but the good news about this is that anyone can attend. It's absolutely free, and you can do so from the comfort of your own home. We'll be re-airing a great segment with Max Pro staffer and tournament angler Ted Beach this weekend about winter fishing for walleye in the Columbia and Snake Rivers, and then Pat Doyle with Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks joins us to share some great Montana state parks to visit where you can not only spend some time hiking and being outdoors, but also learn a thing or two about history in the process. What kind of history? Everything from dinosaurs to Native American history to the Lewis and Clark expedition. From Montana, we head to the Cascades in Washington State, where crowds are flocking to play in the snow. So many people, in fact, that they're starting to have some real problems in places like Snoqualmie Pass along Interstate 90. Colton Whitworth with the U.S. Forest Service will tell you more about what's going on here. After that, John McMillan with Trout Unlimited will come on board to talk about the state of our beloved steelhead here in the Pacific Northwest. We'll go state by state into the challenges these fish are facing and talk about some things that seem to be working when it comes to bringing populations of these iconic fish back. As usual, we'll also have your Sportsman's Warehouse trivia question of the week for you, and this one might be a little tougher for you than usual to figure out. Before we go any further, though, let's see what David Sparks has for us in store on Sportsman Spotlight.
The perfect place to go if you want peace, relaxation, scenic beauty, and dynamite salmon fishing. David Sparks, Sportsman Spotlight. CQ is a waterfront community located on a quiet bay at the northwest tip of the Olympic Peninsula on the Strait of Juan de Fuca. This beautiful rural area beckons you with a unique coastline and an abundance of natural beauty and wildlife viewing. Something else you will find here is Van Riper's Resort. Here's owner Chris Moore to fill us in.
We're pretty much a full-service fishing resort. We have a motel, campground, marina, moorage, launching, and a small tackle convenience store. We're located approximately 50 miles west of Port Angeles on the Olympic Peninsula and about 20 miles from Nia Bay. Primarily, all the fishing we do here is in the Straits of Juan de Fuca. Some of the folks do run out into the ocean, but primarily the fishing that occurs out of CQ is right here in front in the Straits of Juan de Fuca.
And so, do you outfit people?
Well, you'd have a couple options. We have a charter boat that can take people that are not wanting to do their own thing. The majority of the people here bring their own boats that are set up to do whatever. And then we have a small fleet of rental boats. They call them kicker boats that are a 16-foot boat that pretty much just an open fiberglass boat with a 15-horsepower motor that people do their fishing within 6 or 8 miles of the resort.
So you want kings, coho, pinks, also known as humpies? Chris says, come on down. Website, VanRiperResort.com.
David Sparks, Sportsman Spotlight. Want to get into the fish? Then head to the Olympic Peninsula. Excel Fishing Charters will get you into salmon near CQ, where you can keep two Chinook a day, or bottom fishing out of Mia Bay, where an abundant limit of rockfish and lingcod await. You'll be fishing in a comfortable boat with Tom Burlingame, and if you need a place to stay, he's got you covered at the Inn at Mia Bay. Book today at excelfishingcharters.com.
This is Bob. I can show you how to make $1,000 a day.
This is an alert. In 2018, 48 billion robocalls were placed to cell phones, and nearly 50% of those were scam-related. Scammers want money, personal information, and sensitive identity information. They use insurance and free vacation gimmicks as tools to get your cash and identities. Farmers, you have even more to lose when it comes to scams. Identity theft can really damage the day-to-day operations of the farm when your personal information is tied to farm accounts. If you're buying or selling items online, such as farm equipment, expect and know how to spot a potential scam. Watch for area codes that aren't local and make no sense. Another tip, scammers don't know farm lingo, so feel them out. Since robocalls are the number one complaint to the Federal Communications Commission, the U.S. Senate is now discussing a bill to make robocalls a criminal action, which would stop the calls. We urge you to call your senator today. Robocalls are robber calls.
You're back in with Northwestern Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. It is Sportsman Show season, but it's not like any other show season we've ever seen thanks to COVID-19. As you are aware, as a listener to this show, the Great Rockies Show in Billings was canceled. The Wenatchee Valley Sportsman Show, scheduled for February, has been canceled too. A lot of other shows all over the nation have either been canceled or postponed. And some shows scheduled for Northern California and Oregon, they've got some changes too. They're the exposure shows that generally take place in Eugene, in Roseburg, in Medford, in Anderson, California, in the months of February and March. With us here to tell you more about the changes is Joe Pate, the owner of Exposure Shows. Joe, good to have you on the air.
Hey, John, always a pleasure to catch up with you. How are things going in your neck of the woods?
I prefer my life right now to that of a Sportsman Show producer. Your life is certainly not easy. You've had to cancel your in-person shows. You're changing them to virtual shows. What forced your hand to make this decision?
Well, John, first of all, don't even use the word cancel with me, because we're still having our shows, of course. And let me explain how this whole thing has come about, since you asked about how it developed. Back in July, given the manner in which the pandemic was being managed, we met with staff and we thought, you know, that even if it evaporated in the fall, that there may be a very important demographic for us, 55 and up, unable or unwilling to attend the show. So we conceived and geared up to run alongside the live shows with what we call a virtual show, basically a digital presentation. As the path to the live shows narrowed, given governmental mandates, restrictions, capacity and gear, advents, plus the public perception and the fears and all, we figured that it was really a collection of criteria. We just decided to transition here in the last few weeks to a total virtual show.
So what does a virtual show look like?
Well, first of all, the shows are basically an online catalog of exhibitors, sponsors, attractions, seminars, contests, and giveaways, let's say. And also the thinking was this could help us stay in touch with our exhibitors and our exhibitors in touch with their markets at a time when the public's looking for our shows, which are basically February and first week of March, and exhibitors are looking for that public. So it's basically a digital flipbook, and they're categorized with a boating, RVing, power sports and ATVing, paddle sports, local and exotic guides and lodges from Alaska to Africa, governmental agencies and advocacy groups like the Army Corps of Engineers, let's say, or Oregon Hunters Association, and then lifestyle and survival. That way we figured that people would come, they could go through the whole show by flipping through it, and actually what we think we've got here, John, is a real page turner.
Very interesting concept. I also like the fact that somebody like me, who lives in Central Washington, I can now virtually attend the NorCal show in Anderson, California, without driving down there, and check out the local exhibitors now, can I?
Yes, you can. And this is what we're hopeful of, is because we're going to do the same type of promotion, TV, radio, mass media, newspapers and such, as well as social media, that we may actually expand the audience. And, you know, John, like we've talked about this before. We don't really present the hook and bullet shows per se. We really have kind of a, in these smaller markets, a glorified sportsman's fair, let's say. And really, we're promoting the culture of getting outdoors, hunting, fishing, camping, backpacking, hiking, biking, RVing, ATVing, mountain climbing, what have you. And so these markets, we also have a lot of other things that we throw in to spice them up, like the attractions and the giveaways and the seminars and whatever else we, you know, feel the public would like to see. When they come and visit, we exit survey extensively, and we've learned that a lot of times they go, wow, we had a lot of fun here. This is a great opportunity to get out and see some new things and people, visit with some friends and so on. So it's more of a glorified sportsman's fair that we've been presenting. And another reason that we decided that we could not pursue the live shows was because, given the restrictions and capacity mandates, it would not resemble anything that we've presented to the public in the past.
Right.
So this was a way to expand the audience and still deliver the goods.
Folks, let me give you some dates for these shows here. And the website you're going to want to go to is exposureshows.com. The first show is the Eugene Boat and Sportsman Show, February 5th through the 11th. That's where you can catch it online. The Seven Feathers Sportsman's and Outdoor Recreation Show that normally takes place in Roseburg will be online February 19th through the 25th. The Medford Sportsman's and Outdoor Rec Show, February 26th through March 4th. And the NorCal Boat Sport and RV Show will be taking place online March 5th through the 11th. You mentioned seminars, Joe. Are you going to actually have recorded seminars that folks can view, or is it going to be more like a magazine article where here's five tips to catch coho?
Yeah, John, if I could, though, the shows, the names of the shows presented, you know, you missed the Newswatch 12 is the title sponsor of the show down in Medford. And, of course, Crown Motors in the Northern California, the NorCal show, just wanted to make that point.
Sure.
Back to the seminars, and thanks for that question as well. As you're thumbing through this, we're going to have a list of the seminars, and there'll be like Jody Smith doing a turkey and perhaps a sturgeon seminar, Davy Jones doing some kokanee seminars. Charles Luce, high in demand, is going to be doing his Crossing the Bar seminars. And the way this will work is each of the seminars will be listed, and if you're interested in that particular seminar, you would then go to the live link at that individual's presentation, and that would direct you to that seminar. Some of them will be actually taped live, you know, taped seminars, and others may be instructionals.
Gotcha. Here's another question. Does it cost anything for attendees to attend these online sportsman shows?
It's free, which is another reason we're hopeful of expanding the access to it and introducing ourselves to a whole new audience of people. Again, with the promotion that we're undertaking, we're confident that there'll be plenty of interest. And it's free to the public. And another incentive for the tire-kicking public we have is if you come to the show virtually during the presentation times, which you'll notice we've also expanded them beyond the typical three-day weekend. We go into the next week to capture as many, as much interest as we can. But you will be able to sign up to win at least a four-day, three-night, 2 days of fishing, all lodging and meals, taking care of plane and whatnot for a trip with the Baja Pirates of La Paz. And you'll go via Cabo. And so it should be an exciting offering. And that's how we're going to have, you know, throw a little enticement as well as other prizes. I guess we have thousands of dollars worth of prizes that will be awarded over that weekend.
We've probably got some fishing guides, maybe some folks who are knife makers or, you know, do other things in the outdoors that are thinking, I want to be a part of this. Is it too late to contact you and be an exhibitor at one or more of these shows?
Actually, the deadline for Eugene, I believe, is Monday coming up. So, you know, it's pretty limited, but we are still accepting, you know, categorically the right people. Like I said, we try to cover the categories. If I didn't mention already, but they'll be in boating, RVing, ATVing, power and paddle sports, lifestyle and survival, guides and lodges, and governmental agencies and advocacy groups. So, you know, it's not like it's unlimited room type thing. It's just a matter now of being able to process the high quality ads, if you will, that are composing the show. anyone that wants to get on the website, they can look at, or they can contact us directly at exposureshows.com.
Exposureshows.com. That's the website to go to, whether you want
Correct.
To be an exhibitor or whether you want to attend these shows. Let me give you the dates again. In Eugene, February 5th through the 11th. In Roseburg, February 19th to the 25th. Medford, February 26th through March 4th. And Anderson, California, March 5th through the 11th. Except these are not taking place in those venues. They're all taking place online. Those are the dates you can log online to view everything that you're going to see at these shows. The website, again, exposureshows.com.
And the facilities are absolutely been heroic in both counseling and advising and helping us to make our plans. And they're still very much on board, and we'll be promoting the shows through their Facebook and websites and so on as well, so that people, which would naturally, we want them thinking about us, because we're coming back in 2022 with a resounding game plan to just open things up and really look forward to the continuation of our programming.
And I have no doubt you're going to get some great crowds then as well. Joe, we've got to go, but thanks for sharing this with us, and best of luck with these online shows for 2021.
Yeah, John, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for your interest. Appreciate it very much.
More of the great outdoors on Northwestern Outdoors Radio with John Cruz.
This week's Max Minute is actually a replay from last January, but the information is so good that we thought you ought to hear it again.
We've got a special guest for you today. His name is Ted Beach. He is a Max Lure Pro staffer. He's also a well-known walleye tournament angler here in the Northwest. Ted, great to have you on the air.
Hey, thanks for having me, John. Appreciate it.
Question for you. You always hear about people fishing the Columbia River during the winter for big walleye, but you never hear about the Snake River, the lower Snake. Why is that?
The reason you don't hear much about the Snake River walleye is this time of year, those fish are not usually there. So they travel in packs, and most of all your big fish that are caught are on the Columbia this time of year. This is where the state record came from, was on the Columbia. I live about 2 minutes from the boat ramp on the Snake, and I put in there, and then I go downriver to what's called Foundation Island, or what we call Buoy 30, where the Boise Cascade Mill is, and that's where the majority of the big fish are caught.
What about further up the Snake between some of the other dams? Anything going on in the winter there, or basically are we just talking about concentrating on the Columbia?
Basically, we're just talking concentrating on the Columbia. I do want to fish those upper areas at some point. Just haven't had time to do it because all the good fishing is downriver on the Columbia.
I understand. It's the old saying, don't leave fish to find fish. I get it completely. When it comes to fishing in the winter, what's your tried and true technique?
There's a couple that I use. One is the jig method or blade bait method, and then, of course, worm harnesses. And there are a lot of guys that pull crankbaits this time of year, depending on the water temperature.
What do you like to use from Max Lure Company?
I do a lot of my own tying, making up my own lures using Max components. Right now, the Wally Pop this time of year, or the classic double whammy, work really well on the river.
There you go, folks. Some great insight into winter walleye fishing on the Columbia River and not the Snake River. So you know where to go. You know what to use. Ted, thanks so much for sharing this with us today.
You bet, John.
Wedding rings? I've had as many as I've got fingers on my hands. I started off with the wedding ring classic, of course. That smooth blade from Indiana. That beaded body. The sharp hook. We caught a lot of trout together over the years, but then that patented smile blade wedding ring, well, let's just say it took my fancy, along with the trout and the kokanee. Now I'm going through this new age sort of phase. You might say I'm hooked on the new high UV colored wedding rings, and I'm catching more fish than ever. So yeah, I've got a whole bunch of wedding rings. You should get some too. Don't look at the jewelry store though. These wedding ring spinners are from Max Lure, and you'll find them at the sporting goods store near you or online at maxlure.com.
Sportsman's Warehouse is America's premier outfitter and has what you need as a hunter, angler, hiker, paddler, camper, and outdoors enthusiast. They also carry an extensive assortment of firearms and ammunition you simply can't find anymore at many big box stores. On top of that, their knowledgeable staff is here to help you purchase the right gear so you can get the most out of your outdoor experience. Visit your local Sportsman's Warehouse store today or shop online anytime at sportsmans.com.
Welcome back to Northwestern Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. Our next stop today is the Treasure State of Montana. And let me ask you a question. If you are a person who goes to state parks, I want to have you picture in your mind what your typical state park looks like. And I'm guessing it's going to look a lot like my typical state park in terms of there's probably a lake. There's probably a campground. There's probably a day use area, likely a boat launch, maybe a swimming beach. And we've got state parks like this all over the United States. But Montana has a whole bunch of state parks that combine both history and outdoor recreation. That's why we've got Pat Doyle on the line. He's with Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. And he's going to tell you about some of these really special places where you can have fun and learn a lot, too. Pat, it's great to have you back on the air.
Great to be here, John. Thank you.
You know, that was a really long lead-in, and I shouldn't have done that because I really want to dive into some of the parks you have that, again, combine both information, education, and outdoor recreation. Let's start way, way east over by Glendive. You've got one over there that actually goes way back in history where people can learn a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. I believe you're looking at your map, and a good Montana geographer such as yourself. Yeah, we're talking about Mikoshika State Park, which is just right outside of the town of Glendive, Montana. So we're talking right near the border of North Dakota. And Mikoshika State Park, it's really incredible. It is our largest state park in our state park system at over 12,000 acres. And most of that is undeveloped badlands. So, you know, hiking opportunities are unlimited in this park. But one of the things that really makes it special is its paleontological resources that exist in the park. We do have tons of dinosaurs that have been taken out of there over the years, many of which reside at the Museum of the Rockies in Bozeman, which is another not-to-miss place. But such renowned paleontologist as Jack Horner, who was really instrumental behind the Jurassic Park series, is in Mikoshika all the time, taking significant fossils out of there. So it's a not-to-miss spot. It is kind of like a little Badlands National Park just tucked into eastern Montana. So an incredible spot with a lot of good paleontological programming as well. And also kind of along those same lines with significant parks in eastern Montana, I would direct people down to Medicine Rocks State Park as well. It is an extreme southeastern Montana on the border of South Dakota. And Medicine Rocks, it is a smaller park. It's only about 300 acres, but it has been designated Montana's second international dark sky sanctuary. Oh. So the only other one is Glacier National Park in Montana. And this is a place that has world-class star watching. So out there on the plains, just north of Ekalaka, Montana, on Montana Highway 7, really, really cool spot. It does offer some primitive campsites and a really off-the-beaten-path significant spot that I would encourage people to check out.
Pat, let's go ahead and head from eastern Montana to central Montana. You've certainly got some state parks there that, again, combine education, history, and some outdoors recreation.
Yeah, definitely. And two of our real key parks that kind of tick all those boxes are in the Billings area. One being Pictograph Cave, which is right outside of town, which are two really significant caves that have pictographs that date back thousands of years from tribes that would use that area as a travel corridor. And also just south of there in Pryor, Montana, on the Crow Indian Reservation, we have Chief Plenicou State Park in Homestead. And Chief Plenicou was the last chief of the Crow tribe who did build a homestead and farm out in the community of Pryor, and his house was given to us to be a state park many years ago. We've got a great visitor center at both of these locations, and it's a really great place, you know, to learn more about that area and have a lot of kind of cultural immersion. So both really, really cool spots.
Speaking of Native American history, one of my favorite state parks in all of the Northwest has got to be First Peoples Buffalo Jump, just south
of Great Falls. I absolutely love that place. There's a great visitor center there with all sorts of information, but it's also a great place to hike. It's definitely a good place to see lots of prairie dogs, and you can take in the cliffs where early Native American hunters would literally stampede herds of buffalo off the cliffs to go ahead and harvest them. Really interesting stuff. Another great state park that's full of history and outdoor recreation, that would be Traveler's Rest. That is south of Missoula. And if you're into Lewis and Clark history, this is a must stop for you. You'll learn a whole lot about the expedition there. And you can do a little bit of hiking to boot in a really pretty little state park. So many more parks to talk about, so little time, Pat, we have got to go. But thank you so much for sharing some of Montana's great parks that offer not only some places to engage in outdoor recreation, but also some places to learn a little bit too.
Thank you.
Next on Northwestern Outdoors Radio, we've got Colton Whitworth on the line. He's the public affairs officer for the Mount Baker Snoqualmie National Forest in Washington State. Colton, it's great to have you on the air.
Yeah, thanks for having me, John.
So, Colton, you reached out to me because, as we both know, with COVID-19, a lot more people are playing outside, which we both agree is great, but we're kind of having some of our areas get a little bit too crowded. We're having some problems with some of the activities some of the new outdoors recreationists are doing. Let's start off at Snoqualmie Pass. That's the main pass on Interstate 90 between Spokane and Seattle. There's been all sorts of crazy things going on there. Why don't you tell our listeners what some of those are?
Well, we're seeing more and more visitors. We're seeing a lot more new visitors, folks that aren't necessarily familiar with winter recreation. So we're getting more and more cars, and with ski resorts having to limit the number of people they can allow in, we're seeing these resorts hit capacity as early as 9 a.m., especially on the weekends. We have a ton of vehicles that are needing to turn around and find other ways or other places to park or other places to play in the snow.
And I understand some of those other places they're parking and playing are on highway off-ramps. Is it true that you've actually had people sledding down highway on-ramps and off-ramps off Interstate 90?
Yeah, we've seen just about all of it this year, John. Most of these folks, you know, they see other people parking in areas where they're not supposed to be, and we get a flood of cars in these areas, which are, you know, most likely dangerous for them to park there. First off, but also it creates traffic congestion, which has limited access for many of the emergency vehicles and ambulances that need to get through those areas.
Not only that, I understand a lot of these folks that are parking illegally, they don't have the proper cars or the proper tires, and they're getting stuck, and then they have to call for help.
Correct. Yes. The amount of snow in some of these roads, they're not just parking off the highway. They're traveling down some of the Forest Service roads, which can be pretty tricky to navigate if you don't have the proper chains and tires or a four-wheel drive. And a lot of these folks, they get stuck. And when we're seeing so many vehicles stuck each weekend, you know, the staff that we have to pull them out and the staff that the county has to pull them out isn't always available.
A lot of folks are heading into the passes and into the mountains to go sledding, but there's some places they shouldn't be sledding or that they're not allowed to. What's going on there?
Well, we like to say no snow, don't go. So if you're trying to sled or going into an area where you're seeing very little snow, that can cause a great deal of resource damage to that area. And it becomes very apparent in the spring and summer.
Last but not least, have you been seeing issues with trespassing and other private land owner problems?
Yeah, there have been some issues with private landowners, and I think some of the locals in certain areas are getting a little frustrated. And we've seen some pretty interesting things. We've seen people making makeshift tire poppers that go across the road and things like this that are definitely not something that we would ever condone. So
no.
We hope that, you know, the public would leave it up to law enforcement in those instances.
The bottom line is this, folks, behave if you're going to go play up in the mountains. A few tips from Colton that I'll just read here in a release he sent out. Try to stay away during the weekends. Go during the week if you can. Do remember that a lot of those parking lots are filling up by 9 a.m. If the parking lot's full, don't park illegally for the reasons we just explained. Make sure you're prepared for winter travel and make sure you know before you go if the place you want to go play in, you can play in legally and safely. Colton, thanks for sharing this with us today on Northwestern Outdoors Radio, and you be safe out there.
Yeah, thanks for having me, John.
Natural wonders, beaches and coves, majestic forests and scenic vistas are waiting for you at the Tillamook Coast. Lace up your hiking boots, grab your camera, and come to Northwest Oregon. Find out more at TillamookCoast.com.
Backcountry Hunters and Anglers is the voice for your public lands, waters, and wildlife. From the Canadian Yukon to the Florida Everglades, we're stepping up to conserve North America's public lands, defend our hunting and fishing traditions, and expand public access to the outdoors. Our outdoor heritage depends on sportsmen and women like you speaking up for the natural resources that sustain our way of life. Find out how you can get involved at backcountryhunters.org and become a BHA member today.
You're back in with Northwestern Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. Our next topic is the steelhead. It's the state fish for Washington State. It's a fish I truly love. I have fished for them many a year, at least I used to, until recent years, where the numbers have gotten so low that many of the favorite rivers I love to fish, well, they're just not open for steelhead anymore. And it's not just where I live in north central Washington. Steelhead numbers are on the decline through much of the Northwest. With us here to tell you more about this issue and some things that are being done to address it is John McMillan, the science director for the Wild Steelhead Initiative. John, it's great to have you on the show.
Yeah, well, thank you for inviting me, John. I always wish we were meeting with better news, but I sure appreciate it.
Well, let's start off by breaking down the situation in our Pacific Northwest states. And we'll start off in Washington State, where a number of regulations were rolled out this year on some of our Olympic Peninsula rivers, as well as our South Coast rivers, where you can't even fish from a boat anymore. And
right.
Selective regulations. I mean, the numbers have really gone down through Washington State, haven't they?
They have. Our state fish, right? I mean, I was born and raised in Washington, and, I have a long history here. My great-grandfather was born and raised in Oregon City there on the Clackamas. And so, man, a long history here, and it's been a couple trying years, I think, for a lot of folks in Washington. John, it seems like a lot of the populations of both wild and hatchery steelhead that we have in Washington have been really struggling the past 4 to 5 years.
They really have. And you can't just say it's Columbia River steelhead. It's steelhead throughout the state. It's getting to the point. I am really starting to wonder, especially in Washington State, if we're going to lose this battle, if we're going to lose the steelhead as a species we can fish for anymore.
Yeah, I worry about that, too. I mean, and that's the main reason that I've kind of shifted in my life back and forth from being a research scientist at times to then going back to advocate, because I think it's a challenge. On one hand, the science is really important. But on the other hand, my goal as an angler is I want to wake up, one morning when I'm 75 years old and be pretty sure that the next generation of kids are going to be able to fish for steelhead.
Amen.
Because that's the way I grew up. And I feel that connection to nature and outdoors is critical to the culture of the Pacific Northwest.
I agree completely. Let's move to Idaho, which is kind of a mixed bag, because on the one hand, you've got those huge Clearwater steelhead, the B-run steelhead that get up to 20 pounds. And that fishery seems to be doing okay. But you've got other steelhead runs that are heading up the Columbia, then up the Snake and up the Salmon. Those numbers are way down.
Yeah, I think Idaho, Washington and Idaho are kind of in a unique position because, and I'll mention this a little bit, is that, in places like many rivers in Oregon and California, agencies don't have enough staff to actually measure or count the size of the steelhead runs in individual watersheds. So Washington and Idaho are pretty unique in that we actually have pretty good data. And of course, that we have good data in the Columbia, right? Because of the dams. And so, yeah, Washington, the populations have been struggling the past few years, and then Idaho too. And I think even those B runs have not been doing as well as people would hope. It was just, I think, a year or two ago, right, when the run was really small. And perhaps the scary thing for next year is that my friends that study steelhead, my scientific colleagues that are studying steelhead in the Columbia are saying that they're seeing very few one salt fish show up to their southwest Washington streams this past summer, suggesting that next year's return of two salt fish will probably not be very good. So whatever problem we're having in the North Pacific, because I do think this is a bit broader pattern, because even the steelhead populations in the Skeena have been struggling the past few years to having really, really low run sizes, even for them.
Let's talk about the state of Oregon. There seems to be better news there, especially when you look at some of the southern rivers like the Umpqua and the Rogue River and the Chetco. Steelhead populations seem to be pretty healthy. I know they've not been having banner years on, you know, rivers like the Clackamas or the Sandy or the Willamette, but even there, things seem to be better than they are to their, you know, neighboring state in the North Washington and the urban centers.
Yeah, and I think one of the things I have to be careful of is we as anglers tend to be really good at catching fish, so we can kind of catch fish in almost all the years, bad ones or good ones. And Oregon's in a tough spot because, you know, in places in the Columbia, they do measure population size. But when we get out to Tillamook, you know, from that kind of north coast all the way down to the Chetco and Windchook, most of those rivers, the agency has really never measured how many fish exist in any individual population, which makes it really tough. So you might be catching a lot of fish, but we're never sure how many are there. But I do think you raise a good point, John, that once we get down to about the Umpqua River, and the Umpqua has a really long record of data for steelhead, and that population has remained relatively stable since the 1950s. So it's been doing fairly well. And there might be something different because fish in the southern Oregon, northern central California tend to go to a different place in the ocean than our steelhead further north do.
I was going to ask about that, and that makes perfect sense. As for the cause of steelhead decline in the Northwest, I mean, you and I both know, and so do most of our listeners, that it's not just one issue. You can't just say it's the lower Snake River dams. I mean, there's lots of dams that cause problems. There's habitat degradation, especially in urban areas. There's the predation of smolt that are going out to sea. There's the predation of adults that are trying to come back. You've got non-selective fishing methods like gill netting. These all affect steelhead numbers. However, there have been a couple of bright notes in recent years, and one of them is the Oregon Broodstock Program. That seems to be helping some of the rivers down there. Why don't you explain exactly what the state of Oregon is doing and what a broodstock program is?
Sure. So a broodstock program, there's generally what we call two types of hatchery programs for steelhead and salmon. And one is kind of the traditional approach that people use for a long time, like our Chambers Creek or Skamania steelhead programs, where they actually take a population of fish, a small number from some watershed, and then they just rear them in hatcheries, right? But then they plant those in different rivers everywhere. You know, we kind of do a Johnny Appleseed, you know, we'll take like the Skamania fish, for example, are mostly from my home river on the Washougal, right? And then a combination of with some fish from the Klickitat. And so, you know, those get spread out. We call those a segregated hatchery because what we do is we never take in wild fish to breed in that hatchery, right? So the hatchery fish from these segregated programs tend to have, you know, they do really poorly in the wild in terms of spawning, right? Because they've been domesticated in a hatchery for a long time. Doesn't mean they don't provide fish that are important for fisheries. Now, on the Oregon coast, they tend to go a slightly different route, which is using what we call kind of a wild broodstock program or an integrated program. And that's where they actually take wild fish out of the river and then bring some of those into the hatchery to produce offspring. And generally, those fish have higher survival rates from smolt to adult than the traditional kind of, you know, segregated programs that we've used.
One other thing I'd like to mention are the efforts by some of our tribes in the Northwest to bring back steelhead. The Nez Perce tribe in particular did something really interesting a couple of years back where they got kelts. Those are the steelhead that have already spawned. They're heading back. In this case, they trapped them at one of the dams on the Lower Snake River, put them in a hatchery, and then released them in the Snake River, and they expected about a 20% improvement in returns because of this program. Are there some other tribal initiatives going on, too, we should talk about?
Yeah, you know, that's a great call. So, John, I think that program was started with the Yakima Nation. Geez, and it might go back like 15, 16 years at this point. It's that old, you know, where they're trying to recondition post-spawn steelhead, often females, you know, and then let them go after they've kind of given them a whole bunch of food so they can regenerate their fat stores and start to grow eggs. And so I think those are cool programs to experiment with. And my only reminder to folks, though, is that I tend to view management through the lens of a portfolio, right? We have some rivers that are really important, kind of intact places, relatively speaking. Then we have, on the other extreme, some places that are really altered. And so I always go back to, the amount of technological fix I think that we need depends on the conditions of the river. And I just always want to remind our anglers that we've relied on technology for a long time, and sometimes it works, but a lot of times it doesn't work, you know? And so I always want to be cautious, because I think that we don't have a lot of data on the Oregon Coast programs, for example, while we do have a lot of data on these programs for kelp reconditioning that suggest it really is helping those fish. So as a scientist, I'm always going back and forth, you know, trying to figure out what can we do for anglers, but what do we need to do from a scientific perspective to kind of make sure we still have some of our best last wild places. So I think you raise a couple of ideas, and I like these discussions because I think these are the types of discussions that anglers need to have.
We are out of time, but I want to continue this discussion next week, and I want to talk about something that's been rolled out by the Puget Sound Steelhead Advisory Group called the Quicksilver Portfolio that seems to hold a lot of promise, but is already running into some roadblocks. Would you mind coming back next week to continue this little chat?
Will be wonderful, John. I sure appreciate it.
All right. That's John McMillan, Trout Unlimited's Science Director for the Wild Steelhead Initiative. Be sure to tune in next week, and we'll talk more about steelhead and efforts to save them. Thanks, John.
Thank you, John.
Sportsman's Warehouse is America's premier outfitter and has what you need as a hunter, angler, hiker, paddler, camper, and outdoors enthusiast. They also carry an extensive assortment of firearms and ammunition you simply can't find anymore at many big box stores. On top of that, their knowledgeable staff is here to help you purchase the right gear so you can get the most out of your outdoor experience. Visit your local Sportsman's Warehouse store today or shop online anytime at sportsmans.com.
March Madness is coming to the Pacific Northwest, courtesy of O'Loughlin Trade Shows. Things kick off at the Tacoma Dome March 4th through the 7th with the Tacoma RV Show. From there, we head to Redmond for the Central Oregon Sportsman Show the 11th through the 14th. The Washington Sportsman Show returns to the fairgrounds in Puyallup the 17th through the 21st, and then we give you the biggest sports show in the entire nation. It's the Pacific Northwest Sportsman Show, along with the Portland Boat Show, both taking place March 24th through the 28th at the Expo Center in Portland. All of these shows are subject to government regulations, but be assured, O'Loughlin Trade Shows are taking all the necessary steps to make sure you have a safe and enjoyable experience. Find out more at otshows.com for March Madness in 2021.
Looking to reel in the marketing opportunity of a lifetime? Then set the hook, because we've got it right here. America Outdoors Radio has sponsorships available, and we offer an affordable platform to reach thousands of listeners interested in fishing, hunting, and the outdoors. Find out more by contacting host John Cruz through his website at AmericanOutdoorsRadio.com. That's AmericanOutdoorsRadio.com. But hurry, if you wait too long, this big opportunity might just get away. That's AmericanOutdoorsRadio.com.
We've got time for one more shot of Northwestern Outdoors Radio with John Cruz.
Welcome back. This is a tough time of year to be an outdoors enthusiast, unless, of course, you love cross-country skiing and snowshoeing. As for fishing and hunting, there are still a few things to do. You've got your last chances at duck and geese throughout much of the Northwest. You've got ice fishing, of course, and there's always coyote hunting. And when it comes to buying the things you need for any of these activities, the place to go is your local Sportsman's Warehouse store. See what they've got in stock to help you enjoy the outdoors this winter. And if you don't want to go to the store, you can always shop online anytime at sportsmans.com. And with that, it's time for your Sportsman's Warehouse trivia question of the week. This week, our question is about the official provincial animal for British Columbia. It's the bear, but not just any bear. No, this official animal is a very rare bear indeed. It's found on the central and north coast of BC, and that bear is white in color, but I'll give you a hint, it's not a polar bear. So, do you know the name of the bear that holds the title of British Columbia's official provincial animal? If you do, and I don't blame you if you have to look this one up, go to our Facebook page at Northwestern Outdoors Radio. Like and follow the page. Look for the post thread where we've got the question. Give us your answer there. If you don't do Facebook, just go online to our website at northwesternoutdoors.com and go to our contact us page to let us know what kind of bear holds the title of British Columbia's official provincial animal. One person who guesses right will win that $25 gift card we give away every week from Sportsman's Warehouse. It's time to go, and I don't know about you, but I've got the itch to do something outside. I'm thinking maybe a trip to the beach or at least a walk in the woods. Anything to get away from my radio studio so that I can get out there and enjoy all these things we talk about every week. Until next time, do take care, God bless, and make it a point to spend some time outdoors.